And indeed, 19th of June was National Community Radio Day, but I think the 19th of June is over now, if I'm not mistaken. In any event, it's 24 minutes to the hour, and I'm joined on the line by Liam Horan from Schlienoa Careers. Liam, good evening to you.
Good evening, Aidan.
And thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this evening. As always, a couple of topics for discussion this evening. We'll start with the email from DS. I've been running my own plastering business for 25 years. The business is me, full stop. Getting the work in, doing the work, listening to what the customer is looking for, invoicing, chasing up the money, and even some of the day-to-day bookkeeping. Alas, business is drying up. I fought the good fight for the last few years. I want to find a new job. Problem is, I've no qualifications and don't really know who'd employ me. Can a jack of all trades get a fresh start? I suppose this is a question that many, many people ask themselves every day of the week.
Yes, we are living through a time where people's old certainties in terms of careers have been fairly severely challenged. And that can be a very good thing as well. If you know, sometimes we can get very staid in our careers. But to answer DS's question, yes, I would say a jack of all trades can get a fresh start, but there is some preparatory work to be done. It won't be just as simple as, you know, jumping from A to B. You know, you've got to kind of repurpose yourself, as the saying might be. You know, you've got to rearrange yourself, you've got to rearrange your experience, and you've got to repackage yourself, again, another sort of glib marketing term. But you've got to, you know, you've got to make yourself attractive to employers in a different sector. What I detect in DS's email is a kind of a sure I did everything and nothing kind of a mindset, which is not unfamiliar not uncommon in the case of a self-employed person. They often underestimate what they actually do. They list it as if it's only, you know, small things that they did, but all of those things on their own are quite serious attributes or quite serious bits of experience. For example, what they're saying there is they got the work in, which is sourcing work. They did the work, which is, you know, executing the work. They met customer requirements. They did invoicing, which is bookkeeping, business management kind of thing. Chased up the money, which is part of business management, credit control, and as I said, some of the day-to-day bookkeeping. So there's a whole lot of skills there that DS has built up that they may be inclined to just put down as, I ran my own business. So the duty now is to not to bulk the skills like they have done it, but to actually separate them out into distinct items so that, first of all, DS himself and then later potential employers can see those skills for what they are. You know, if you don't let a bit of light shine in around them, it can be very underwhelming in terms of the, you know, for the potential employer. So, you know, they've got to really understand what they exactly did. For example, did they do some marketing? Did they do some public relations? Did they do quality control? I'm sure they certainly did that. So what other phrases could be assigned to the work that they did? And that's where the beginning of the transferring from position A to position B takes place, is by first of all understanding what you have done to this point and how it can be categorised in a written form on a CV.
There is a certain apathy in that email, and I suppose that's not altogether surprising, or at least it shouldn't be, because here you have an individual who ran his own business for the past 25 years, no mean achievement in itself, but probably then wondering in an entirely different era of advanced technology and the like, that perhaps is going to be left behind in the tailwind.
Yes, and there's something else there that is not uncommon for people who make a transition. Is he says, I have no qualifications. And that's something that people who have been down one line and are forced to change often wonder about, well, hold on, I'm not qualified to do anything else.
And but he has experience, though.
Absolutely, and but that's something that people can quickly, you talk about a kind of an apathy. It's kind of a knee-jerk reaction, isn't it? I don't know how to do anything else, and if I do, I have no qualification to prove it. But qualifications are frequently overrated as well. Experience on the job, prove yourself on the job, all that kind of thing could stand to DS in the future. And really what they need to do is to, first of all, identify their skills and achievements and experience to date, see where they might work next. I mean, what's there to stop DS here working in a local medical devices place, for example, where lots of the attributes that he displayed in his previous career could be very welcome, as in reliability, hard work ethos, which a self-employed person always has. A self-employed person has the ability to ensure that things are done right, because they know that if I don't do it right, my business dries up anyway. So there are lots of things there that are broader kind of skills that, that DS can transfer to a new arena. And that's, I suppose, the main challenge is to identify them, go back to every aspect of your work to date, write down words and phrases that govern every aspect of that, like accuracy, reliability, making things happen, dealing with difficult situations, financial management, whatever they did, write them all down and then see where else in other sectors or other careers might these be used. And the support of a friend or a family member can be very helpful here as well, because when you're down one line, and DS was deep down one line for 25 years, you struggle to see anything bar that hole. Do you know what I mean? So you need to come back out with a look around the place and dig a different hole next time round, bringing the same attributes and experience and skills to bear, albeit in a different arena. So to answer your question, yes, they can get a fresh start. There's some work to do, particularly getting their CV to speak to the next sector and understanding what they bring to the next sector. But yes, they can do it.
Do they need to upskill or retrain, do you think?
That may well come to light when they start looking at the transferable skills they have. So say, for example, they decide to go down the road of doing something in medical devices, they may need to do a short conversion course, or if they decide they may need to do something in IT, that's frequently a course people do when they're changing sectors, because then your IT, your lack of IT skills can come to light. But it'll kind of present itself as you look first, you know, from look around the place, okay, could I fit into that sector, and what do I need to do to get into that sector? Certain deficiencies in your training may present themselves, but do you need to go back to college? In my experience, that going back to college full time is not always necessary at all. In fact, you know, shorter courses that prepare you for the next sector are often very, very useful.
Very good. So all is not lost as far as DS is concerned.
Absolutely not.
Okay, another email, this time from LN. I've got the job and the contract has come in the post. It's about 90% of what I would want it to be, but I feel the role description is too broad. I know from working in this sector that nobody could fulfil everything they're looking for in the spec. My fear is that this contract could be used to get rid of me down the line. I really want to do the job, but should I kick up a stink now?
Well, the contract negotiations wouldn't be my exact speciality, but I did talk to an accountant who has a lot of experience of drawing up contracts for employers and also studying ones that have been offered to him over the years. And the points he made when I spoke to him about this were, the main thing in contract negotiation, and this is very applicable for LN here, is not to throw the toys out of the pram, not to start raising major queries right now, but to go back in an approach of, great that I've got the contract, thanks for sending it on to me, looking forward to getting started kind of thing. Just a few things I want to check. Can you look over the following and come back to me as soon as you can, okay? So you approach your negotiations very much on the understanding that, yes, you are going to do this job, just sorting out a few, dotting of a few I's and crossing of a few T's. So don't start the negotiations with the standoff, I'd say, is to summarise what my accountant friend was saying. He says you sometimes see people who, when they get the contract, go in far too bullishly and leave no room for negotiation. They create tension that can even linger into the job itself. So you need to, it's not unlike when the government, when political parties are drawing up a program for government. If at all possible, they leave the leaders out of the negotiation so that there's a higher power, there's a bit of room left, if you know what I mean. Whereas if you go straight to the top of the hill, and I'm talking about the contract situation here, if you go straight to a very head-on confrontation, you leave very little room for going over and back. The other key piece of advice, I think, that was that my accountant friend said was to isolate what the exact issues are. You know, if there's six things in the contract that you feel are six job duties too many or are not exactly the job duties you should be doing, reduce it in your own mind to those six and sort of sign off on the rest of it with the employer and sort of focus in on those six. And before you focus in on those six, you need to know what your opening and closing positions are. You know, are three of the six things that would make you walk away? Are all six things that would make you walk away? Four, kind of where is your cut-off point? And you should know that so that you don't get sucked into the emotion of a contract negotiation. And he made that point as well. People sometimes get to kind of feel that they've been insulted by the contract or it doesn't take into account their professionalism. Kind of try to avoid that and keep it as a professional discussion, almost as if you're negotiating on behalf of somebody else. So professional and personable, not risen with emotion, not taking, you know, not reacting in a way that's going to take goodwill out of the arrangement if you do go on to do the job, and also giving everybody, giving the other party involved, something that they can actually focus on. Like, these are three things I really must get resolved. I'm happy to concede a bit on three other things. Know your position, and hopefully, with a with a mature company, that they will meet you halfway, and between the lot of you, you'll get there. I've seen people not get what they want in the contract. I saw one case recently where a gentleman didn't get what he wanted in the contract and still took the job, and that hasn't worked out for him either, because there were certain kind of things that would have broken the deal, but he didn't act. He didn't feel confident enough, I suppose, at the time to say, I'm not going to take up this job. And because we're working in an economy where there isn't huge opportunity right now, but he now regrets that he didn't actually not take the job or go further on getting the point that he wanted to get dealt with. So you need to know what your bottom line is and not to go below it. Not unlike what went on the Celtic Tiger when people were bidding for houses and saying, well, my budget is 200,000, sure, and next thing they're 245, and they only went up there in 5 grand increments, which didn't sound that big at the time, but ended up being €45,000 above their budget, kind of thing. So know where you're at, know what you want, where you're going to get out on, know what the deal breakers are, so to speak, and try and keep the whole thing as professional and personable as you can, as long as you can, would be the advice for LN.
Very good. We have to leave it there. Liam Horan, as always, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this evening, and we'll talk to you again this evening week in or about 5:30.
Thank you very much, Aidan.